Yes, welcome back. Welcome back. Man, I think that was a fire show that Ray had. Larry Sanders. Man, fantastic. This is a fantastic day. I'd like to see people thrive and strive, especially as black men. We got to do what we have to do. Get it done. And whatever it is to get it done, we hit home runs, man. Sometimes as black men, I recognize that when that ball is thrown at us, man, we got one swing. Sometimes that one swing is all that matters. And we do hit home runs. So congratulations to my people. You're on the grapevine. I'm your host, Manan Sabir. You're on the award-winning The Truth 101.7. And we're about to pick some grapes. I got to pick a few grapes. There's a lot of grapes I want to pick today because I'm a little taken aback by the memorial that got taken down at 4:30 in the morning this week. Was it? I think it was this morning. It's 4:30 in the morning, not 7 a.m. like Madison, Wisconsin told the family. 4:30 in the dark. Corey Ruiz, 38 years old, tased, taken to the ground, shot 3 times. That's right. Including one in his face. And it was in Madison, in broad daylight. Everybody saw it. So today we're just not going to cover that. We're going to go deeper. We're connecting the dots from Corey Ruiz to Dr. Claude Anderson. I've been quoting him a lot because I think he's a credible face in the black community, and that we have to listen to him because he's been telling the truth for a long period of time. He says, usually there's only two things that keep a group in control for centuries. That's the economy and the military. The economy and the military that protects it. Look at Iran, look at Sudan, Gaza, South Africa, Venezuela, Cuba right now. Same machine still expanding their territory, no matter the cost. No matter the cost, they're still expanding their territory. It's up to them. They got to do it. They have to do it. Then we'll go straight to the money. The National Urban League's 50th anniversary report just dropped. That's right. The National Urban League's 50th anniversary report just dropped. You won't believe it. I mean, you may believe it. You could believe it. It just dropped. And 567,000 black men lost their jobs. That's over 500,000 black men lost their jobs. I'm going to say that one more time. Over 500,000 black men lost their jobs between 2024 and 2025 on into this year. 500,000 plus. And we're going to break that down because we're not going to just report the pain, though. And I don't want to just report the pain. I think we get on these platforms, whatever platform it is, and we search for the pain, and then we give it to you. But there's some feel good. There's some feel good moments, and it's a lot of them. It's a woman in Metcalf Park. I don't know her, but I probably, you know, have ran across her. Her name is Kelly Smith. She turned her own front yard into a food pantry. That's right. She turned her own front yard into a food pantry for her whole entire block. I'm pretty sure people are traveling a couple blocks just to get to that. So we probably close there because we're going to run out of time. Just even highlighting her. And I really wish if somebody knows Kelly Smith right now, if you know Kelly Smith, who the young lady who turned her food pantry, her front porch, her front yard into a food pantry, please tell her to call me. 833-212-1017. 833-212-1017. Tell her to give us a call. Give us a shout out. And hopefully we can get her on so we can interview her ad hoc and ask her about her her food pantry. So if you know Kelly Smith, tell her to drop us a line, 833-212-1017. And if you are doing something, and remember this, if you're doing something in the community and that no one knows about, please call in. Don't be afraid to give us a shout. Do not be afraid to give us a shout, because we give you the news, but we want to understand and know what you're doing in the community in order for other folks to understand that you're doing your job, that you're doing it. So right now I'm going to get to the brutality that we are facing right here in America in Madison, Wisconsin. So this headline, it struck me because I know that there are a number of people that witnessed, and we know the whole entire country witnessed Corey Reeves being shot by an officer. So we're going to strip away the police statement for a second and look at the sequence Ben Crump's own legal team laid out from the bystander video. Corey Reeves taken tased. He was taken down to the ground. One officer's knees on his back. He was tased. Knees on his back. He's laying down. And then a gun comes out. He's shot multiple times, close range. One to his own face. So that is not a struggle that ended in a tragic split-second decision. That's a man that had already stopped. He was already controlled, and he was a threat to no one. He was a threat to not one person. He was still absorbing, when he was down, still absorbing gunfire. That's the definition of brutality, Milwaukee. Force that keeps escalating long after the danger has already been stopped, already been neutralized. Ben Crump called it an incident. He didn't call it an incident. He called it execution. So after you actually walk through that sequence step by step, it's hard to argue with that word. So this is not new to us here in Milwaukee. This is not new to us in Wisconsin at all. We already know what Dr. Claude Anderson had already said. And I want you guys to keep this in mind. There are two levels of control that a community must abide by in order for the governing power to win. And that is economic governance and a military governance. Remember that. So Milwaukee, none of this is new. This is not new to this country. This is not new to the state. And this is dang sure not new to any of these two cities, Madison or Milwaukee. So almost 60 years ago, an 18-year-old named Clifford McKissick was shot in the neck by a Milwaukee officer running for his own porch. So this is during the riots, Milwaukee riots. His mother marched into her own kitchen at gunpoint while he died behind her. So if we think that this is new, and for those of you who are younger than me, this is not new. This is all the same. It has been happening. It has happened, and it will continue to happen until we do something, until we learn that we have to control the economics of this country, until we learn how to control the military, right? That's us. Or we have our hand in it. Look at Diallo, Grant, Rice, Scott, Gardner, Taylor, Floyd, Nichols. And the number beneath all of this In 2025 alone, police killed Black Americans at a 6.9 per 100,000 person rate versus a 2.9 for white Americans. The same brutality, different decade, different face, the same math. It's for real. So, Milwaukee, let me ask you a question. When does restraining a suspect cross the line into brutality for you? Is it a tase? Is it a knee? The shot after he's down? I want to know, like, where is crossing the line into brutality start for people out in our nation land, the truth nation land? Where does it start for you? Because for those of us who've been detained by the cops, that is one of the hardest jams you can get yourself out of, if you can get yourself out of it. So I want you to call in and let me know. Let me know where you would draw the line. Let me know where the line crosses also. 833-212-1017. This is a part of our mental health. This definitely is a part of our mental health. Now, here's what I really want to talk to you about today, and what the city did to Corey Ruiz's memorial at 4:30 in the morning, before the sun even came up. That's where we're spending a little bit of time, because for a city to say that they were going to give the family who's still grieving this execution, they're still grieving their family member. The city was going to give them time to take down the memorial at 7:30 and also send people to help, but then reverse the fortune and reverse the compassion also and tamp down on them with, you know, whatever military forces they have and erase the memorial. Now, that's foul. So we're going to talk a little bit more about this, a little bit more about Corey Ruiz's memorial, and see what we can come up with. We'll come back in 3 minutes on the award-winning The Truth 101.7. Yo, welcome back to The Grapevine. I'm your host, Manon Sabir, and yes, we're back. Glad you are here. The memorial comes down. We're picking some grapes. The memorial comes down in Madison, Wisconsin. That memorial for Corey Ruiz, the gentleman who was shot in Madison three times by the officer of the law. The memorial came down. My question is, does protesting actually work? Does protesting actually work? To everybody, if you think that, I want to know for me, even my own sake, does protesting work? Do you feel like things get done with protesting? That's the question that's sitting in the room before I even tell you. That's the question that I want to know before we even tell you, go into depth, before we even show you this video of what happened this morning. I want to know by the time I'm done, does protesting actually work? Whether or not it does something in communities. From what, and I'm going to quote Dr. Claude Anderson again. He said protesting doesn't work. It doesn't force anybody's hand. So I want to know from people if protesting works. The memorial at the shooting on Williamson Street in Madison grew into a full camp. Tents, barricades, food service for the people, keeping vigil there, like all of that. Like everything. They got you know, people camping out. It's just a whole city right in the middle of Madison. And we got a video. It's a little video. I think we can show it a little bit. What we got?
Madison, this is drone footage from our NBC partner station WMTV showing crews removing tents and memorials from a barricaded intersection early this morning. The encampment is surrounding the memorial site where Corey Ruiz was shot and killed nearly 2 weeks ago. Police in riot gear surrounded the area during the cleanup earlier this morning. Authorities have arrested at least 10 people. And right now, our Mike Biermeister is on the ground near the site to show us what it looks like this afternoon. Mike, what can you tell us?
Well, Andrea, as you can see, Baldwin and Williamson is now reopened. As you can see, the protest encampment here has now been removed. And what we're seeing here is a lot of tense shouting here at the protesters who still remain, shouting at police officers that are here on scene. There's about 50 or so protesters. But if you look over here, I'm going to direct you to see all of the officers on the other side here that are standing by just in case this escalates to something more. But this is what it looked like earlier this morning when law enforcement as well as Madison City crews came in to remove the encampment, which has been at the intersection of Williamson and Baldwin Streets for nearly 2 weeks, where Madison police shot and killed Corey Ruiz following a struggle in the streets. I actually just walked through where the protesters still remain. Their message loud and clear to police and everyone that's here right now.
Don't shoot. We want to go up. Black Lives Matter. Don't shoot. We want to go up. We are intimidated by the cops. We are scared of the cops. We will protect us and keep us safe.
That's what they do every single day.
Yeah, and Madison's mayor just released a video statement moments ago where she says the city took the nearly 2 weeks to try and peacefully resolve this occupation before bringing in law enforcement as well as city crews this morning. We do know there have been a couple of arrests as well as citations, but we'll be out here live in Madison. Mike Biermeister, TMJ4.
Yes. So city crews come in. You have to take a look at where Madison sits, because it sits in basically in the middle of bottom part of Wisconsin. And where it sits, you have ATF, DEA, you have a lot of folks operating out of that area in Madison, what I think it's called Jefferson County maybe. And when you look at it, they got the power straight up. They have the power. They do definitely have the power. So when you have an encampment that's pushing against the city's plans, what are they going to do? What are the people going to do? The only way you can make that happen, make the memorial continue and prove a point, is to negotiate and be rational with the people that have the power. That's straight up, plain and simple. So city crews came in. They had a bulldozer. They had stuff inside the bulldozer, whatever, you know, whatever weapons, whatever they had. And boom, they went in and did what they had to do and got people out. And yeah, and no doubt that as a business owner, previous business owner, I recognize that if something is blocking your business and your business is being hurt, what do you have to do? What are you going to do? If it's hurting your bottom line, you're going to call the government to tell them to move in so you can make your money. So maybe the businesses were being hurt, or maybe that was an excuse. Hey, we'll never know, because I think the mayor, she had called for peace, but then she brought a little bit of war. So here's a part that should genuinely bother you, though. And Milwaukee, no matter where you land on whether the encampment itself needs to go, a witness said the timeline the city gave the people wasn't the timeline they actually used. Her words, these are her words. She said they told these people 7 a.m. and it was 4:30 a.m. They told them they had to give them time to pack up. There was no time. A city that took weeks to even confirm basic facts about how Ruiz died. They moved with urgency, though. They moved with complete urgency, like ready to go. Ready to go. And which is crazy, because for them, how they were talking in the first place, they said that this was an active homicide investigation. And if it was an active homicide investigation, you have to have services that correspond with the active homicide investigation, which is don't cause any more trauma or drama in the community in which there's an active homicide investigation. Think about the optics. If we think about the optics, Milwaukee, a memorial for a man tased and shot in the face. It's dismantled before dawn with police standing by with their weapons while the actual investigation into his death is still unresolved. This is untimely. So whatever you believe about barricades and business impact, the timing tells the story. They do that all the time. And protesters have been unmistakably clear. They have definitely said that they're not done. I want to know what are they going to do next. So they said they're not going to stop. I don't know how organized they are. It is Madison, so there is real life. You know, there are some organizations down there that are do-gooding and that are really organized. So this is not over. Milwaukee, no matter what, how many tables, tents got loaded into the truck this week, they're not done. But I got to ask a hard question. I really want you to sit with this. And this is my hard question. And before you get defensive, is protesting really working? Is protest really working for our people right now? Freedom Inc., which is it led the organized push down in Madison, the city still came back at 4:30 and cleared it out the way. Law enforcement standing by, other enforcement agencies standing by, other enforcement, they built encampments. Like, they got a whole city in the middle of an intersection, a busy intersection. But then these people wait until 4:30 and erase it in an hour. Gone. All of it gone. It's cleared out. Is protest the way to do it? Dr. King said a protest exists to create a crisis so that real negotiation becomes unavoidable. Dr. King said protests exist to create a crisis so that real negotiation becomes unavoidable. So here's my question for you. Did Corey Ruiz Memorial ever create that kind of crisis, or did it create an inconvenience? Did it create a crisis, or did it create an inconvenience? Because these folks had an early alarm clock, man. They went out and they cleared the entire thing out. Y'all, we have to think about that. If protest alone isn't creating an unavoidable crisis anymore, what's the next tool? Economic pressure? Boycotts of businesses? Remember, Dr. King was boycott. They did the whole waste to sanitation boycott, and that was a problem. That was a problem. We have to, we can't keep pretending and beat around protests as if it's working. Is it really working? We'll see, y'all. I want you guys to answer the question. I'm gonna come to the chat in a minute, because Kat, you're on fire in the chat, man. Now I'm gonna take this all the way up to Milwaukee, because what's happened to that memorial isn't just about one this early morning in Madison. It's about who actually controls the entire board that we're all playing on. I'm going to talk about Claude Anderson when we get back. We'll be back on the award-winning The Truth 101.7. Homie, you fucked up, but if God got us, then we gon' be all right. Yes, we're going to be all right. Are we going to be all right? We're going to be all right, Milwaukee. Welcome back to The Grapevine. I'm your host, Manon Sabir, and we're picking some more grapes. And I wonder if we're going to be all right. Do protests work? Do protests work? We're talking about the gentleman, Corey Ruiz, that was murdered by a cop in Madison, Wisconsin. The encampment got taken down after 2 weeks. And do protests work? The encampment was taken down. And the mayor said, get back to business as usual, basically. Mayor Rhodes, whatever, Satya, Mayor Satya in Madison, Wisconsin. Do protests actually work? Hit me up in the chat. I'm going to hit the chat real quick because that's what we do. Cats is on fire. How many ambulances had to go around the Corey encampment when minutes mattered? Why did it turn into a free-for-all so nonprofits could put up tables selling their game and businesses? Protests and strikes work if they are tight and organized. One speaker, an intelligent sound voice screaming like a banshee gets on one's nerves. It worked in the 60s for Milwaukee. Nationally, now, no leaders now. Sip said, it's 2026, protests don't work. I'm pretty sure that in the 60s, they probably said the same exact thing. But now we sat in, we kneeled, we boycotted, we shut down bridges, put our bodies in directly in front of police dogs, fire hoses, National Guards, troops, you know, put our bodies right in rocks way. Like, what do protests work? But here's the uncomfortable question, honestly. After the cameras leave, what do black people actually get? Did marching change America? Or did America learn how to wait until we got tired? Because George Floyd, the murder of George Floyd sparked one of the largest protests in American history. Corporations posted black squares. People were taking a knee. All kinds of people, from Colin Kaepernick to, you had politicians then later on taking knees and, you know, during all that. There's a famous picture of politicians at the National Memorial taking a knee. Streets was renamed, but 6 years later, people had DEI departments, building out entire DEI departments just to address this. Now, on one hand, we say that if you look at that evidence, protests did work. And I'm not either or. I'm just trying to find out whether or not protests work. But 6 years later, after all of that, are black people safer? Are police more accountable? Did the money move? I mean, we know some people stole some money. Some people stole not a little bit of money. How about a lot of money? They stole. Did the power move? Today, we're putting a little protest on trial. We're putting our protest on trial. Does protesting work for black people? Or has marching become a pressure, like a pressure release valve on a pressure cooker? You know how your grandmother would take a pressure cooker and she'd put them greens in the pressure cooker, and then all of a sudden, you know, when the greens are done, the pressure releases, boom, and you get in those greens, taste the smoked turkey, it's good. Has marching become a pressure release valve that lets America calm us down without changing the system? Will the system change? That's what we need. That's exactly what we need. We need system change. So think about it. You could protest and have different outcomes. A protest can, you know, you can talk about public attention. It can have the outcome of change public opinion or new legislation. People can, for protests, it can help people push people to change budgets or institutional practices at universities. Remember, a lot of protests happen at universities. A lot of protests happen at universities. Kent State, there we go. A lot of protests. It can change electoral power. Some economic consequences can change. So, you know, we can't say that there's evidence that it doesn't. We can't say that protests don't work carte blanche and generally, but there are long-term improvements in Black people's lives in relationship to protests working. Now, a protest can succeed on television and still fail in the neighborhood. A protest can succeed on television from your living room when you get home from work, when you finish that 9 to 5 and you got to go around the protest, you got to drive around the protest and hit that home. Think about it. You're sitting at home and you're looking at that protest. And did it change your neighborhood? That's what you're asking. You need to ask yourself that. If that protest actually changed your neighborhood. So here's my other question. When Black people protest, what should count as victory? What should count as victory? Awareness and arrest? Are we actually looking in terms of protests? Are we looking for an arrest? Who should be arrested? The person who killed the person who was shot or murdered, the offender? Should we count as victory? Should we count as victory a new law or measurable improvements? There we go. Measurable improvements. 5 years later, 5-6 years later, should we count that as improvements? Because look at we made full, like there were full budgets for DEI departments, for diversity, equity, and inclusion the departments. Full-fledged budgets. People were shifting budgets left and right. They were moving that money, baby. People had pay raises, all kinds of stuff. But then, did it really change the culture of the company, of the companies? Because if you look at the companies now, and this person that's in the office right now, he shook up the game, he shook up the world, and he cut all that funding, and he allowed those companies to show their true colors. He allowed them those companies to show their true colors. So I think the receipts are real in protesting. The receipts are real. 1965, a peaceful demonstration, Selma, Alabama. President Lyndon Johnson, he signed the Voting Rights Act. You know, like after Bloody Sunday. After Bloody Sunday, he signed the Voting Rights Act. And the violence was televised nationally. It was on television. It wasn't pay-per-view like we got right now. It wasn't on Kick and, you know, Roku and all these other places. No, it was televised. People was watching it from their homes. So, you know, the marchers didn't really raise the awareness. It was the blood on the bridge. It was the blood on the bridge that helped at least force the federal government to protect voting rights. But I think there was even more forces at stake in relationship to the Voting Rights Act of 1965. We're not going to get into that. But he did sign it August August 6th, 1965. He signed it, and it went through. But that's what they were fighting for. It was a mass there were mass protests in the 50s and 60s that helped produce the Civil Rights Act of 1964 and the Voting Rights Act of 1965. But you have to remember, they did bus boycotts, sit-ins, there were voting registration campaigns, lawsuits. This was an organized strategy. This was an organized strategy. This was organized. And we think right now that protesting is, you know, someone with a bullhorn, and you're kind of right. You know, screaming like a banshee gets on one's nerves. Not everybody is screaming like a banshee on a bullhorn. But if you are talking about something, then you have to have a strategy behind it. And that's the question that I want to ask. Does protest work? Does protest work? The march actually was the microphone. The organization, economic pressure, and political strategy actually carried the message into the law then. But what are we doing? Is our message and our organization carrying and switching the law? There are many, many questions in all of this, but the one major question that we have to ask is, do protests work? When we come back, we're going to continue on. We're going to continue on and talk about whether or not protests work. And we got some more news to catch up with. We'll be back in 3 minutes on The Truth 101.7.
Black man, drop top. They go to cops. They go to cops. They go to cops. Is it because of my people? Is it because of my sneakers? Is it because of my jersey? Is it because it I'm perfect?
Woo! Boom. Boom. Yes, welcome back. Welcome back to the Grapevine. We're picking some more grapes, and we're talking about everything. I'm on my soapbox. This is Taco Tuesday. We're picking some grapes on the Grapevine, and you're on the award-winning The Truth 101.7. And if you got anything to say about this topic, let me know. Hit me up on the chat or call in 833-212-1017. The phone lines are open, 833-212-1017. I'm going to repeat that, 833-212-1017. Do you think protests work? And my second question, I want to let that sit there. I let it sit there a little bit. My second question is, does Corey Ruiz, in God bless his soul, get treated differently by this system if Black America controlled more of the actual economic machine in this country? Do the people, the persons that were murdered by the system, get treated differently if Black America controlled more of the economic machine in this country? Really? I want to know. Dr. Claude Anderson, if you know who he is, Black World, White Wealth, think about it. I think that's the book. We can probably put it up later. There are only two things that have kept any group in control of a society generation after generation for hundreds of years. And that's control of the economic machine. That's control of the economic machine and control of the military that protects it. No, not one without the other. A group that controls the economy pays for the military that guards it. And that machine, once built, it does not sit still. It expands. It expands constantly. It's ever expanding. It's generation after generation. Now look at the world right now and tell me that Dr. Claude Anderson wasn't on to something. Isn't on to something. He's still around. Iran. The U.S. is openly at war with Iran. Our gas prices are getting higher and higher. Then they go down. Then they go back up. Market manipulation. They said Steve Witkoff and Jared Kushner made close to, I think it was $200 to $300 billion or something crazy off the market manipulation. They have manipulated the market. They squeezed the short, squeezed the market. I think they said close to over 9 times. Over 9 times. That's a lot. Those two individuals themselves did it themselves. So U.S. openly striking a country over 100 times in a week, fighting over oil choke points and trying to move the entire whole global economy. Sudan, the world's largest displacement crisis. Genocide after genocide going on right now. From our own U.S. State Department. They've said this. Over 12 million people driven from their homes, and it's barely covered. Gaza, a humanitarian catastrophe. The world's watching in real time. Venezuela, Cuba, decades of sanctions and economic pressure. Economies completely zombied, squeezed. The regime after regime after regime have been targeted because an independent economy that doesn't have the answer to the machine is treated as a threat, not as a neighbor. That is control. And Milwaukee, I need you to hear it closely. I need you to hear this. South Africa right now, in 2026, is dealing with real documented, what you call xenophobic violence. Black South Africans attacking black African immigrants from Nigeria, Zimbabwe, Mozambique, burning their shops, killing people, driving them out by the thousands. You guys think this is unplanned? This is all planned. All planned to turn people against each other. Not only are we doing it here, but we're also doing it there. So, if we think about it, here's my direct link to Corey Ruiz. Claude Anderson has been warning us about this pattern for years, that when people don't control their own actual system, their own economic base, then scarcity turns people against each other. That's what happens when you have scarcity. Teen takeovers happen. Black on black violence happen. Hunger happens. Individualism happens. And the people underneath it keep fighting over the scraps instead of the source. They keep continuing to fight over the scraps instead of the source. Look at Corey Ruiz, man shot, tased in his own city. They clear his memorial out. But that's just not one bad officer. That's what an entire machine looks like. An entire machine that can control the economics and then the military, the functioning of the military. They can treat a single black life as an error, an escape button on your computer screen, on your computer keyboard. Press escape, done. Or delete, that's your button. Or backspace, that's a button. Or even just a space bar. Tap the space bar. Or those ellipses when you have another thought in your text thread, in your text message. Doot, 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 and then you place another thought. Just whatever is in that space, erased. That's what happens. A body on the ground, memorial in the dark, and a machine that never once stopped expanding. When we are able to control the economic machine, then we will be able to win. So, really, here's the question. I'm going to pose it again. Milwaukee, do you think Corey Ruiz gets treated differently by this system? Or let's, if we take Corey Ruiz's name out, you know, not to disrespect him, but if you take Corey Ruiz out, you put you in. Does Manon Sabir or, you know, Joe Williams or whoever you are, do you get treated by this? Do you get treated differently by this system? If this system is controlled, if the black people, black America, have more control of the economic machine in this country? I mean, I'm not talking hypothetically. I'm talking about really, structurally, you know, from policies, all that. All of it's insulated. Do we get treated differently by this system if black America actually controlled more of the economic machine in this country? I need y'all to let me know what you think. Let me know. Does this resonate with you? Like, do we get treated differently? 833-212-1017. And that, let me see on the chat real quick. I'm gonna see what they say. Let's see. Cass said, no leaders now, just talking heads who have that God complex, want to brand themselves. Ah. Shaky says, the protests start strong, but what's the end game? Protest then what? Yeah, protest then what? Where are we going with the protest? Cat said, 2.7 billion surplus in Madison while NPS school zero. Oh, okay. Cat, you on fire, man. Organized civil disobedience. Those are effective. Cass says ACLU gouged Milwaukee for millions, 2018, 2025. Not a dime went to the black man. Black man profiled, stop frisk, no charges. ACLU made millions off their backs. Thanks, David Crowley. Oh, I mean, I need some more research on that. I don't know what some of that time I was gone. So, yeah, let me know what else you find. You know, I want to understand what you're bringing up, but we want to understand the truth. I want to understand the truth behind that. And if you could bring it up, let me know. Milwaukee, we'll be back to pick some more grapes. We're on the truth. We're on the truth. I'm talking the Truth Nation. Y'all call in, hit me up on the chat. Let me know what you think about some of these topics. We got a question to be answered, but we have more questions to be answered on the second half of the Grapevine while we're picking some more grapes. You're on the truth, the award-winning